I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Do the building and construction trades help or hurt Philadelphia? On the one hand, these union members are well-trained, receive good pay and benefits, and add to the regional economy. On the other hand, those costs can make some projects too expensive and unprofitable, hurting the region's growth and development. There have been allegations of strong-arm tactics from developers wanting to use a mix of union and non-union workers or having an open shop. It's our topic for today's Radio Times. And joining us here in our Philadelphia studios is Tom Ferrick. He's a veteran journalist. He's covered government and politics in Pennsylvania for about 40 years. He's a contributor, to Access Philly. That's a nonprofit news and information organization covering the greater Philadelphia area. And his column is titled Publius. And Tom Ferrick, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here.
Also with us is Pat Gillespie, business manager of Philadelphia's Building and Trades Council. He was elected to this position in 1982. And Pat Gillespie, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Yo. That's the way you introduce me.
I understand. We're
the scourge of Philadelphia.
No, Lord.
Well, where'd you get that from, Ferrick?
I got it from Ferrick.
Sure.
Let me ask you a question.
Please.
How many unions, then, do you represent?
There are 42 local unions presently in the building trades. That's down from 52 when I became the manager. There's been mergers and consolidation.
And the range of unions that we're talking about, just give us a
those
handful.
In the construction industry, all those relative to the construction industry, from a laborer to a bricklayer to a pipe fitter, plumber, sheet metal worker.
What's the typical wage, benefits? What are we talking about here?
A livable wage. It varies. It can go total cost packages could be at $100 an hour.
As much as $100 an hour?
Not nearly enough.
Not nearly enough.
I mean, you said as much as.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about, I mean, what's
the
fringe
benefit package and those kinds of things, health care and pension and the other relative costs.
So we're talking about $100 an hour?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah.
Could be. And I mean, are there people at the lower end of that?
50. Yeah, it could range from 50 to 100.
Does that seem like a good salary to you?
It seems like a livable wage.
Do you see it?
Unfortunately, one of the problems that we have in America these days is you have a whole lot of people who are working at McDonald's and other places and not making nearly enough. And we in society seem to think that that's okay. They'll find their bootstraps and pick themselves up, while the people who own these facilities run around with a guilty conscience after they make their billions and want to start giving it back. They'd be much better off just paying people a fair wage.
Let me get you to weigh in on that, Tom. And I'm assuming you have nothing against a good fair wage with good benefits for anybody in this country.
No, I'm in favor of that. Thank you very much. Foursquare in favor of good wages.
Do you think $100 an hour is too much for someone to get paid?
No. I would like to be paid $100 an hour. But the problem is not the amount of the wage. Let me say that talking to people about organized labor in the building trades, they will tell you three things. One, the workers are great. They're well-trained. They have an apprentice system. They know what they're doing. Two, the wages are high relative to other wages in the region, comparable jobs outside of Philly, comparable jobs in other cities. And three, they will also talk about what they talk as sort of what I would call work rules that can add cost to a project. And the net result of it is that Philadelphia has something like the third or highest per square foot cost of construction in the country. But we cannot get the rents that those others do. Like the glib line, and it's not mine, is
right.
We have New York construction costs, and we could charge Baltimore rents. And that's a problem.
Do you see that as a problem, Pat?
It's a glib line. It's simply not a problem. If you look at the anxiousness that we now have to get apartments built, to get other facilities built, the capital that's coming into the city right now is phenomenal, and people are running around. One of the things I'll say about our people is that they are well trained, and that they perform well, and they are the most productive worker in the construction industry, as the union construction worker. When you get to the next step that Tom just said, folks don't want to pay. Nobody seems to want to pay, yet they still have the BMW, they still have the Mercedes-Benz. The soft costs on a lot of these projects are phenomenal when you look at, well, what is it you're getting? At least with a plumber, you're getting plumbing that works well. Or with a steam fitter, you won't have a gas explosion. You know, yeah, you have people who know what they're doing and do it competently. You know?
Well, let me quote Tom Farrick here and something that you wrote, Tom, that using an all-union workforce can add 30% of the cost of a project. You also say that the
Stop right there, because all this is pablum that's fed to Tom from the non-union association. These numbers are I mean, it's amazing. 30% of the cost of a project when the total wages of a project, of a total wages on a project don't amount to 30%. How can it be?
Well, let me hear from Tom Farrick.
Well, it didn't come from the building industry, the enemies of the people. It came from people who study this both at the academic level and people like Kevin Gillen and people who are experts in it. And I've also talked to people in the business about it too. And that's the quote that is commonly made in that. Maybe it's 27, maybe it's 32. Mm. The fact of the matter is that they do cost more. And I think
they cost more, but they, you know, it takes a mechanic to do on a construction project. 10 years ago, you may have had 15 plumbers. Now you have 7. All right, those 7 are doing the work that 15 prior have done, and they do it well and efficient and effectively, and it gets done the right way the first time. Now, you have to pay people a fair wage. People have a right to a skill. These are craftsmen. They study their work. They work hard. They work in all kinds of nasty conditions, hot and cold, and whatever else you have, and they do their job. That has to be paid for. Now you compare that to people who are undocumented workers or people who are working as a 1099 employee of a contractor, of a developer, that who, you don't have the resident costs that come along with hiring a legitimate worker.
Well, but do you think there's something in between that, Tom, between hiring someone who's unskilled versus the kind of high skill that Pat was just talking
about?
Well,
Pat's good as a good Manichaean. He's a good Catholic fellow. So for him, it's either a choice between a highly skilled, wonderful plumber and an illegal immigrant who's working under the table for cash. I would suspect that there's something in between.
I've been here since 1982 at this job, and I don't make this stuff up, or I don't have to go back. I mean, these have been my experiences. Now, where you have, and I'll get in trouble for saying this, where you have a legitimate employer who doesn't provide protection of collective bargaining to his employees, but pays them fairly and equally, you'll see they're competitive. I mean, those rates of pay are comparable to what the unions have. I like to call it union avoidance. They have good mechanics. They mm-hmm. treat them well and pay them well, and maybe give them a turkey at Christmas time. But
if they're paying them well, why do they need a union?
Well, they don't. So we can't make them union.
By the way, I think I got to be clear here. We're talking about Philadelphia, the city of Philadelphia. In the region, the unions, in the regions, there are mixed projects that are done, having union and non-union people. It's in Philadelphia where you have a union monopoly or a virtual union monopoly over most of the projects that are anything,
well, hold on, hold on,
anything,
hold on,
anything over a small, you know, an individual home or something like that. And de facto, you have to use union help. That raises the cost of construction in Philadelphia.
I wish we had union exclusivity like Tom has just laid out. We don't. We compete with all kinds of entities for work, both in the suburban communities and in the city.
So in the city, there are non-union workers?
Of course.
A lot of non-union projects?
Mm-hmm. Sure. There's 22nd and Market. That was non-union. 13th and Wood, that's non-union. There's a lot of non-union. There's a lot of non-union projects in the city.
13th and Wood, you tried to stop.
We tried to stop them all.
I know you did. That's the point.
Listen, that's nothing hilarious about that, Tom.
I'm not laughing at it. I'm just saying, they're doing these non-union projects.
Let me ask you something, because I think we might be hearing from one of the developers at the Post Brothers apartments. But nonetheless, this was a mix of union and non-union employees working at that site. Was that unacceptable, that it had to be 100% union?
I think what's unacceptable is destruction of our wages and standards. All right, and we have a right to protest that, and that's what we do.
But I think there are some developers in the city that would probably like to hire union people, but they say they can't afford it.
Well, what is it that they're doing? I mean, I love that sentiment that, well, mm-hmm. if they were just cheaper, mm-hmm. well, sure, we'll do it for nothing. That's fine.
So you can
take your kids to the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. I mean, what we're talking about here is men and women who have studied to become mm-hmm. a craftsperson. All right. Now, they should be, number one, provided a fair wage.
I agree.
All right. And the marketplace dictates that. And we do that through collective bargaining with our employers. Okay. Listen, we don't have to have benefit nights for developers. I mean, just take a look. Take a look at the real estate bar. Take a look at the folks. I mean, is anybody starving? Mm. They're making a whole lot of money, and no one wants to say, well, you know, you can make it with your soft cost, but the people who do the actual work can't make a fair wage? Well, that doesn't make sense.
Let me pick up on that, Tom. Let me go back to you and past talking about, you know, let's say $100 an hour, a very nice salary, I must say.
It's not.
Wait.
No, but understand, it's barely adequate.
I mean, let me pick up on that and go to you, Tom. I mean, would you feel more comfortable if it were $50 an hour? I mean, do you think that's a good salary as well?
Here's my thing.
Most people in this city don't make even close to that kind of money.
Here's my thing. In the city of Philadelphia, you have a de facto monopoly of unions. We don't have the mix of union, non-union construction. That's number one. Number two, that does raise the cost of projects. And we're competing in an office market and a retail market, places like Chicago and outside in the suburbs and stuff, and I think that puts the city at a competitive disadvantage. That's number one, okay? It's not that they're evil inherent, you know? I mean, it's not. Number two is, who does it benefit? Who do these high wage scales benefit? Well, my argument is, if you look at the city of Philadelphia, which is majority-minority, you'll find very few minority faces in these unions. You'll find very few Philadelphia residents, and you'll find virtually no women. So who's benefiting? Who's getting that great wage? The guy that lives
in Delaware? Bunch of white guys from the suburbs.
Well,
isn't that terrible? Let's crucify them.
It's not terrible.
No, hold on.
No, we can't hold on. Why? Because here's the deal.
We do have to hold on because we're up on a break.
Oh, oh, you're making these breaks up.
No,
you told me I would hear music.
I have to say, I didn't hear the music.
I didn't hear music.
There it is. They're playing my song. Talking about unions here in Philadelphia, talking with Pat Gillespie, business manager of Philadelphia's Building and Trades Council, and Tom Farrick. He's a contributor to Access Philly, and his column is called Publius. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We will be right back, I do promise, and Pat will go right back to you.
Are you or is someone you know overweight? Drexel University is currently enrolling overweight participants in Mind Your Health, a research study evaluating methods of losing weight and keeping it off without medication. These programs are funded by the National Institutes of Health. More information online at drexel.edu/weightloss or 215-762-4900. That's 215-762-4900. Drexel supports WHYY.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we don't ask the usual questions of our celebrity guests, and we don't get the usual answers. Here's legendary anchorman Tom Brokaw making a startling admission.
You can tell where my inclinations are. I'll take nipples over body odor any day.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for the news quiz that practically guarantees too much information. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR. Saturdays at 4 on WHYY.
Next time, the youngest guests we've ever had on this show.
Yeah, we made a lot of money.
Yeah? We made a lot of money?
Yeah, we made a lot of money.
Like, how much would you make in a day?
About $1,600.
No, really? The Middle School Medal of Unlocking the Truth. Next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about Philadelphia, known as a union town, and our guests again are Pat Gillespie, business manager of Philadelphia's Building and Trades Council, representing tens of thousands of union employees, Tom Ferrick, longtime journalist, a contributor to Access Philly, where he writes his Publius column, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Pat, you were responding to Tom's comments about who exactly are in these building and trades unions, the idea being that they are largely white suburban men. True?
Well, no, it's not true. There are we are as diverse an organization as any. We are one
any union league.
We're one of the few entities in the city of Philadelphia that I'm aware of that has outreach programs, that have programs of inclusion, and I'm very proud of those, and they've been very successful. It's easy when you want to create a villainous atmosphere, it's easy to say, well, this doesn't impact anybody but some stranger who doesn't even contribute here. Well, that's an idiot way to do things. I mean, it's just a simple Simon kind of stuff. We are now the one failing that we have is women in construction. We have trouble there, and we are redoubling our efforts. We had a very successful program at the Housing Authority that we instituted down there that got scuttled because of the change in leadership. Down there, the change in management, but they're trying to start that again now.
Well, Tom, and I keep quoting you, but you're part of the reason that we're doing this show. You said 99% of the building trades are male, 76% white, 67% live in the suburbs.
It's a lot. I wouldn't call it a diverse workforce.
Now, it's kind of funny. He writes these things and he becomes an expert. That's kind of amazing.
But listen,
that's a failing of the system. Any project that we agree to have participation in.
Right.
All right, and diversity. We've overdone what was asked of us. The unions have, all right? Much to the chagrin of our employers and other groups around, we've done that. The convention center expansion is a glaring example of that. But any project, Temple, right. University of Drexel, all those projects that we're involved in that have a neighborhood inclusion program in it, it's a program that we've encouraged or instigated.
Well, let me give you a chance, Tom. Where did you get those numbers, and do you stand by them?
Well, one of the things I like about Pat is that he's very articulate and outspoken and is really good at defending the undefensible. So
you think that's undefensible?
And I think it's indefensible, those numbers. I'll tell you where I got those numbers. I'll tell you where I didn't get those numbers. I didn't get them from the unions.
No, and you won't.
They don't give them out.
We won't, because that's our business.
That's fine. I'm going to give them a chance to respond.
That's number one. Number two is I got these from a sample that I've done twice now of all the OHCD-funded housing projects in the city. Where they do
most of whom are non-union.
These are all unions.
Housing projects.
I separated out the non-prevailing wage ones. So these are prevailing wage, which de facto often means union.
No, it doesn't.
I know, but it means union forces.
Who are the union contractors on those jobs?
Because
someone tells you it's a union project. I'm telling you.
All right, hold on just for a minute.
All that stuff.
Pat, hold on. Put the stick down.
There are no sticks. I just saw our listeners.
Isn't that typical?
There are
typical
no sticks.
Tommy, he might holler at me.
We just saw both of our guests here. I promise you, we frisked them at the door. Go ahead, Tom.
Very shortly, I stand by the numbers. And the numbers are 81% white when you exclude the labor's union, which is majority black.
Wasn't it 99%
of men? No, it's 90. No, it's actually 99.3% male. It's like Spanky and our gang. They have a clubhouse and it has no girls outside of it. I mean, come on. We have women police. We have women in the army. We have women everywhere, but we don't have women plumbers.
But do you think, Tom, that these numbers should represent the city of Philadelphia in terms of its demographics, its racial makeup, all of that?
Here's the deal. People, as Pat says, they deserve livable wages. And everybody deserves that. And the crafts have been the traditional way for people to get good-paying jobs without the necessity necessarily of a college education. They're good, hard-working jobs. And I think that should be shared among the people who live in the city of Philadelphia and who can use that.
As do I, and they are.
And they don't.
And his numbers are specious. And he's been told this a number of times, but he stands by these numbers because he went to one agency that said, well, I'll give you, where did the men and women who worked in the convention center come from then? All right, there was the largest construction project in the city of Philadelphia ever, all right?
I'll tell you how it works.
It was huge. No, you don't know how it works, Tom.
I do know how it works.
Well, hold on.
And at the same time that was going on, we had the same kinds of programs at the University of Pennsylvania, inclusion programs, and the same kind of programs at Drexel, and the same kind of programs at Temple. Now, where do those people – is it the same guy we keep counting? I mean, do you think that's what it is? Nonsense. We have outreach programs that I'm very, very proud of, and they work, and that's that.
So these numbers are just
nonsense.
Way off.
They are nonsense.
And, Pat, what are the numbers?
The numbers are our business.
Oh, my God.
The numbers are our business, and why shouldn't they be our business? I mean,
why should, what are you afraid to disclose?
There's nothing afraid to disclose.
I know you're afraid to disclose because these are the representation
you're assuming
of the numbers.
No, I never assume. Yeah.
That's what my mother says, never assume.
Yeah, well, you're doing an assumption about why. We don't disclose that because there's a situation in labor law that requires privacy and it's goofy, but
let me move on. I do want to give out that.
Let me just say one last thing.
Go ahead, Pat.
We entered into a program with the School District of Philadelphia to include a certain amount of graduates into the union construction business, into the apprenticeship training, and the school district initially asked for 240 over a 10-year program. We changed that number to 600. We eventually wound up getting 895 graduates of the School District of Philadelphia into the building trades unions. Now, this is over a six-year period of time, all right? And did they all become apprentices? No. Did they all become craftsmen? They all became apprentices. Did they all become craftsmen? No. They changed their life, altered as young kids' lives will alter. All right. Did they all stay in the city when they become journeymen? No. But a large proportion of them did.
And that's Pat Gillespie again, business manager of Philadelphia's Building and Trades Council. He represents
99% of white guys from the suburbs. That's the deal.
No, it's 81. Not 99.
Okay. It's 99 male, according to Tom Farrick.
Do you want to get a word in edgewise?
I do. And I should just quickly reintroduce you again, Pat Gillespie, business manager of Philadelphia's Building and Trades Council. Tom Farrick, a contributor to Access Philly. He writes the Publius column, and we are talking about the unions here in Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me see what Matt from Mullica Hill has to say. Matt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello?
Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Well, now I'm in the bank. You have to. Like I said, I told you before, anybody who says a union bricklayer is overpaid ought to try it themselves. They would. Like I said, they got to be on the job 7 o'clock in the morning, no matter how far the job is from where they work. They have to pay for their own gasoline to get there. Right? Let's see what else. They work themselves to death for 30 years for a little pension, and they take home, if they're lucky, $900 a week. Now, like I said, I'm not a union bricklayer, but I have friends who are, and that's the story they tell me.
All right, and
the guys who own the buildings get to be multi-billionaires What do you mean they can't afford to pay you and your wages? They shouldn't be able to afford not to.
Well, Matt, let me give Tom Farrick a chance to respond to that. I just did some quick math. So $900 a week is about $52,000-$50,000 a year.
Well, first of all, I'm glad Pat's cousin called in.
He's not Pat's cousin.
He sounded like him.
Well, there are a lot of people that agree with Pat and Matt.
This is funny. Tom wants to keep us in servitude. You know, just keep the keep
Simon Legree.
Keep the people down.
Remember Victor Jory and Gone with the Wind.
Keep that boot heel on your neck.
But we're talking about using Matt's example. You know, $50,000 a year for someone to be a bricklayer.
Let me add one other component to that. The bricklayer who's up on the scaffold who does the work and who is the backbreaking work, by the way, they are truly artisans if you look at the work that they performed around this city. The trouble is they work themselves out of a job. All right, when that wall is done, that guy gets laid off. All right, so he then has the other problem of where's my next job coming from. And pretty much that's where the building trades comes in. That's why we get charged with ham-handed tactics sometimes, because we have to find that next job.
Do you have sympathy for that, Tom?
Well, I'll say that the building and construction trades has been hit hard by the recession.
Yes.
I looked up, or if you want to listen to Pat, I made up some data about membership and found that they were down about 11% from 2008. And you know what happened in 2008. The shovels came down, the bottom fell down, and some of the losses in some of the unions are double-digit. Some of that is due to automation. It's not due to just the recession.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're under retreat. And in fairness, even though they have no problem, and they have lots of minority members, one of the problems has been is that when you're in a prevent mode and you haven't got enough work for your existing members, a lot of the unions haven't gone out and started apprenticeship classes. So as a consequence, even if you wanted to bring in more women, more minorities, they're not there because of their economic situation.
Let me get, looks like Bill from Belmont Hills to join our conversation. Bill, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
I'm a freelance grant writer. I've been working for about 32 years. I'm white collar, and I've never been in a union. But if it wasn't for unions, we would not have the 5-day work week, the 8-hour day, health insurance, minimum wage, paid vacations. And it's not just union jobs who got these. It's everybody. It had a halo effect for the rest of us workers. And so in terms of diversity, I would challenge Mr. Farrick to see who ran these places that employed the union workers. I think they're all white men, just like much of the management in Philadelphia is all white men. And I'm an old white guy, too. But I'm just saying, I think unions are far more diverse than top management, even now. And the point is that we're in a climate where there's a huge political attack against unions and against fair wage. A lot of people on Capitol Hill are even trying to eliminate minimum wage. So I would appreciate a little countervailing word about management. You know,
well, you know,
we
Bill,
have unions,
let me take your point. And again, I'm tossing
off.
That to you.
He was making the best point.
Did he fade?
No, it's about management. It's about workers. It's about what unions have done to help workers, broadly speaking. Tom?
But that was back in history when it needed to be done.
Right.
It doesn't need to be done now.
I thought she was asking me, Pat.
Yeah,
thanks for answering.
Go ahead, Tom. Yeah,
that's Tom's answer.
Don't confuse me anymore. Now, go ahead.
Well, you know, I'd like this to be an either-or proposition. You're either for the working man or you're the enemy and you're with management. Fact of the matter is, I was a member of a union for years. I believe in unions. I was a union officer. My father was one of the founding members of his union. My grandfather was a union member.
Why I'm sad.
We're all union all the time. But if criticism of unions and the way they operate constitutes treason, then I guess I'm a traitor.
But do you see it that way, Pat?
I know. And I think we all need critics, and we need to be self-critical. We need to analyze ourselves to make sure that what it is we're doing is actually being helpful. I pride myself in some of the things that the building trades unions have done. We have industries that were leaving Philadelphia, and we rallied together to save them and to save the type of businesses. We advocate for projects that do societal good. Now, some people say, well, no, that's not the case, that you're just interested, it's just to create work. Well, that's true. There is that. But a lot of the projects that we advocate for. Now, I don't want to get into management because capitalism is a funny thing. It'll go like water. It goes the path of least resistance, okay? And that's just the realities of the life that we're in and the system that we have. Is there a better way to do things? Well, I guess there are, but this is the hand that we're dealt here, and this is what we have to do.
Well, this goes back just about a year, actually, last summer when there were protests outside of the Post Brothers apartments, and the Pastrunk brothers had hired both union and non-union workers to work on that site, and they had video cameras so that people could see union members delaying trucks that were making deliveries. There were some altercations there. This stuff was captured on camera.
Oh, my God. Was it awful?
Well, these are the strong-arm tactics that people refer to.
Strong-arm tactics. The two of the people who got hurt were demonstrators. The city, under their attempts to help this project, all right, that was a project that had no permits whatsoever. When that was discovered, Department of Licenses and Inspection shut the project down. All right. And in record time, in like a day, they got all their permits because someone in the city escorted people through the system. All right. To date, it's still a mess over there. They're still trying to get their permits and trying to do kinds of things. But we're allowed to say we don't like this treatment. We're allowed to say we have to protect our wages and our standards. And at what expense? The rents that are being asked for or down there are the same rents that Philadelphia apartment company. What's that guy's name? The guy who owns a lot. They're comparable rates. They're comparable rates.
See, I don't think anyone has a problem with protests, but you're quoted as saying, I don't know if this is true or not, telling, I guess, the owners of this or the developers, if you don't make this project 100% union, we're going to do everything in our power to shut the job down.
No.
And that's different
no,
from...
I would never, I would, no, no, I would never, say that. Maybe in my youth I would say that because that's a crime to say that.
Right.
Now, the Post brothers have had me investigated. The FBI investigated me. The Homeland Security people investigated me. Apparently I became some kind of national threat or something. Now, it was all to no avail. They have access to a lot of folks. They have access to a lot of money.
Mm.
And the people that they have hired, a number of them are those 1099 people who aren't necessarily citizens.
You know that?
Yes, we know it.
You have evidence of that?
Yes.
We're almost up in a break here. Tom, anything you want to say in comment to that?
No. You know, I mean, it's the dichotomy. You either hire a good all-American worker or an illegal who you pay under the table, and that's the world. That's the two sides that Pat sees. And I don't blame him for seeing it that way. That's the way he should present it. But to call what happened at that project just normal protest
our history at the building trades. I mean, we defend our wages and standards vigorously.
Well, they're playing my song. We have to take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Pat Gillespie and Tom Ferrick about unions in Philadelphia, the trades. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art proudly supports WHYY and presents Art After Five, a blend of jazz and international entertainment every Friday. This Friday, Paul Jost and Tony Maselli interpret rock standards from the Beatles to Led Zeppelin in a contemporary jazz format and will perform a diverse repertoire in an acoustic ensemble. Beginning at 5:45, Art After Five. More details are available online at philamuseum.org.
On the next Fresh Air, the story of Masters and Johnson and their controversial research into human sexuality based on observing volunteers engaged in the act. We talk with Thomas Mayer. His book, Masters of Sex, which has been adapted into a Showtime series, drew on interviews with Virginia Johnson, who died last week. Join us.
this afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Million people without a home, they all have voices.
When I was 6 years old, I was in the camp. I lost my family, like my mom and my 7 siblings. I don't know where they are right now.
Refugee stories in their own words, the human consequences of headlines from Syria to Nairobi. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Tom Farrick, who is a contributor to Access Philly, writes the Publius column, and Pat Gillespie, the business manager of Philadelphia's Building and Trades Council. And we are looking to for the answer to this question, do the building and construction trades hurt or help Philadelphia? Maybe both. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Tom, you have written a lot about the Pennsylvania Convention Center, and I'm quoting you a lot here, but nonetheless, you write, there are 6 unions that work at the center, the riggers, the stagehands, the laborers, the teamsters, and the electricians. Sources say 5 of the 6 perform up to expectations. As one source familiar with the center operations put it, we don't have labor problems. We have a carpenter union problem. What were they referring to?
Well, they're referring Pat, till recently, was on the board of the convention center. It's a state-owned and operated, paid-for, $1.2 billion great facility in the center of town.
An edifice.
There's an edifice complex connected with that. But and it opened with an extension in 2011 with the hope that there'd be more business. And the talk at the time was we were going to get 20 to 30 citywides a year. Citywides are the big conventions that fill up hotels, basically. And the other side of it was we could get 2 conventions of good size in at the same time because it's so big. We have 21 conventions this year, but in the future bookings and convention business is very much oriented towards the future. It goes down every year until it reaches 6 in 2016. And the convention center board and others concerned about that are looking into the reasons for this. They had hired a consultant. They put a workout on this, and that was what came out of it, that the people who book conventions are concerned about labor hassles and labor costs and unexpected overtime costs. And as a consequence, they're not rebooking. Mm. And some of these bookers handle for like several organizations. So if you lose one, if you lose the firemen, you also lose the police officers. And that's a problem. And the convention center board has decided to try to deal with that issue. They currently are negotiating a new customer service agreement with the unions. They've also hired an outside private firm to help run it. It's a process in flux.
These are major steps. Now I see where Tom got his 99% white guys from the suburbs.
No, women.
It's the men part.
Okay. The convention center, the customer satisfaction agreement was an initiative that came from the unions. They had asked for input because the place, and it sounds crazy, but the place was never managed properly. All right, we had some great minds in the city in the business. So you got a guy by the name of Tom Aldoon who was at the convention center. Now, Ferguson is there now. These people know that business. They know how to attract conventions. They know the business that we're in, and they're good at it. Why they're not utilized more is beyond me. But we now have SMG as that's the last thing I did. Last thing I was involved in when I got removed from the board, and Ed Coryell took my place, the head of the Carpenters Union. I was in the wisdom of Senator Williams from Philadelphia. Not that I'm mad at that, but I harbor a little
such
ill
is life.
Will towards. Yeah, that's the way politics is.
Right.
But he's running for mayor now. So anyway, the SMG is now in the process. As a matter of fact, they're negotiating yesterday and today with all the unions about it. Now, a number of the things that the unions say, the business itself is a little unusual because I say that the financial predicates of it are based on in expense account financing. Like spending that money.
Well, let me just quote here, and this is from it's a consultant, the PFM Group. This is a quote. It's clear that the primary issue facing the Pennsylvania Convention Center, past, current, and future, is its labor supply and their inability to satisfy customer expectations. The issue was highlighted in nearly every interview PFM conducted with internal and external stakeholders.
When they did the interviews, they said, tell us what's wrong with the unions at the convention. That's how they did the interview. I mean, and it's been that way. They protect the business. And it's because you have folks who are running it who really don't know the business. Mm. Now, if you don't know a business, you hire somebody who does. So SMG now is the contractor who will be managing the convention center. They're at the table now with those unions to make modifications and adjustments in the customer satisfaction agreement that will have a.
But are you saying that the unions there have no responsibility?
They have an awful lot of responsibility
for customer satisfaction or dissatisfaction,
and they have a lot of warts. And a lot of things, but a lot of things have been corrected. Mm. And for instance, one of the banks that we all run around, they gave up premium time 10 years ago. A lot of those contractors who come in, who you're dependent on to come in,
right,
because they have influence with exhibitors, those contractors still charge those exhibitors premium time.
Well, let me
Although they only have to pay straight time.
The convention center.
Go ahead, Tom, and then we'll get back to
the
our
convention
callers.
Center is Groundhog Day. These problems with labor have been there since the day it opened. And a lot of them have been dealt with. They used to have fistfights over jurisdiction. That doesn't happen anymore, okay? That's number one. Number two is the problem
we like to say it was a fair exchange of ideas.
That's right, it was a firm and fair exchange
of
ideas.
A great euphemism if there ever was.
And secondly, the thing is that the problem we have here is, there's an old line by a PR man, perception is everything, the rest is reality.
I'll agree with
the
Tom
perception on
that. On
the Booker's part is that this is a tough place right. to do business, mm-hmm. and there is evidence that it is.
And that gets abused by
and
people.
You can go to Chicago, you can go to New Orleans, you can go to, okay? So to correct this, you can go to Orlando.
Let me interject here.
Don't make a speech. Very briefly.
I will not. We made curative steps. And we put them in a customer satisfaction agreement. Chicago took those things, put them in their booklet, and all of a sudden it was managed.
Yeah, but they enforced it.
No, you're right. They managed.
Oh, is that the difference?
They managed the building better.
And so what happened?
And by the way, SMG was the contractor out there managing that building.
So we're going to correct this. And the head of the building agent for the Carpenters Union then is a guy named Ed Coryell Jr. It's the son of Ed Coryell Sr. Who gets named to the board? In a management, which is a management position, Ed Coryell Sr., who, in a sense, is going to be not negotiating directly.
He'll do a wonderful job.
But responsible for negotiating against himself. Now,
Tom, you have to understand. It's not. See, that's the wrong premise. If that building is dark, nobody's working.
I know.
You know so you want that building. My mantra at the, we want to wear this building out, so we have to build another one.
You want satisfied customers.
Absolutely. We need work.
Here's the deal. I'm going to tell you, though, if they don't solve this problem, there will be no conventions. If there's no conventions, the 99% of the guys who are working
here,
who are white guys.
All those white guys from the suburbs.
Are not going to be suffering all that much. But who will are the people who are cleaning. The cleaning ladies, the staff, the hospitality people, those are the people who are going to be hurt.
By the way, they're union members also.
And they're of color, as opposed to white, just white.
Let me get Dolores on. Dolores from the Northeast to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Dolores, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to talk to the gentleman about diversity in the unions. My son's a Local 98 guy, and I know that union quite well. There's a lot of diversity. You don't believe me, you go to their picnic this summer and you'll see diversity. Furthermore, go to the Labor Day parade and you'll see diversity galore. The gentleman doesn't know his facts because there is diversity.
Well, thanks, Mom.
My mom has no problem.
First your cousin, then your mother.
Dolores, I appreciate the phone call to Radio Times, and obviously, Tom.
My mother's name was Dolores.
That's in your court.
Well, that's a great perception, and I will say this. The Electricians Union has made strides, according to the numbers that I apparently made up and don't mean anything, has made strides in getting more minority members. A friend of mine used to say that, or a guy involved in the unions say that diversity in the unions used to be hiring the second son. Because let's face it, in unions, there's a lot of father-son, there's a lot of passed down in generations, and that's a tough thing to break.
Sure.
But I think some of the unions have been working towards it.
I broke the legacy in 1964 when I got into the union. I got in as someone's uncle. I didn't even know the guy.
See?
Yeah. He was a trailblazer.
Dolores, thank you for calling.
A white guy from Delaware County.
Radio Times.
No, I was in West Philly.
That's right, West Philly.
Let's see what Kate from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Kate, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to address one of the comments from one of the speakers and even a past caller that developers walk away from construction projects as billionaires and that they can clearly afford higher construction costs. But it just reveals a lack of understanding about how construction projects are financed, because a lot of the money that finances construction actually comes from pension funds, public pension funds, union pension funds. And as long as the construction costs are high, then the pension funds can't make their return through real estate, and they'll invest in something else like private equity or hedge funds. So I think it's important to understand that billionaires, developers don't just become billionaires mm-hmm. because of their own capital, but because of the people who are in the public market.
Kate, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Go ahead, Pat.
Well, that's very good, Kate, and you're right. And we have hundreds of millions of dollars invested in Philadelphia. In our pension funds, John Dougherty has been from Local 98 has been championing that cause for quite a while now, and we do need a return. But construction costs are what they are. They're manageable costs. People get a good return. We just entered a deal with the Carlyle Group to take over the Energy Solutions, mm-hmm. the Sunoco refinery. We were involved in that. We were involved with the Delta Airlines to take over and create Monroe Energy down in Trainer in Pennsylvania. There are interests now in Philadelphia who want to take over and the gas works. This is real money, real capital coming into Philadelphia. We are on the precipice of some great things, some great industrial things in Philadelphia, and I'm really excited about those kinds of things.
Okay, thanks for calling into Radio Times. You can call as well, and again, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. I hate to keep going back to that, but to this, I should say, but I have this information that we got from the Pastrunk brothers, Michael and Matthew. This was about a year ago.
Are you the house organ for the
Pastrunk? No, I am not. I'm not, but I have some.
There are millions of projects in the city.
I understand. Well, let me just quote something that they say.
Good
because
public relations.
Well,
guys.
For whatever reason, and you can respond.
They should spend more on construction.
You can respond to this.
You're on the side of evil there, Marty.
Yeah, I know. Apparently.
Look at the horns.
I've been here before.
I wish this were a video.
I have been here on the side of evil before, but let me just quote something from them.
I'm glad you recognize it.
I do, and I want to give you a chance to respond to it. The Post Brother Carpenter's billing rate, $35 to $45 an hour. Philadelphia Carpenters Union hourly billing rate, $63 an hour. Washington, D.C. Davis Bacon Carpenters rate, $34 an hour, which is closer to what the Post Brothers Carpenters
in Washington. What's the Philadelphia Davis Bacon rate yeah. for a carpenter? It's right. what the prevailing wage rates are here. These folks. They come into town and they want to change the way we do business, and that's their right, and that they're welcome to do that. Our rights and what we should be doing and what our obligation is to protect what we have, but at the same time, we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We're involved in numerous projects as I mentioned, and folks make money. It's not as if. Now, maybe these guys don't know how to do their business, or whatever reason it is. But they spent more time, and they're still nowhere near finished. Mm.
And I'm looking at the clock here only because we have a couple of minutes left. And Tom, as someone who has been both a supporter of unions but also a critic,
person.
And I mean, moving forward, then what is your solution? I mean, is it a matter of reducing some of these pay and benefits that some of these union members get?
I think the Post Brother project was significant because I think it put a crack in the monopoly. I think it's inevitable that there will be mixed sites in town, and I think that overall that's good for the city in terms of its economic growth. I don't think it'll lead to wage slavery on the part of unions. There's plenty, and I think that the system we have now is being artificially sustained by the political power, the substantial political power of the unions. And I don't think that's for the – it's great for the unions. I just think it's great. It's not great for the city. Mm.
But do you see under this union, non-union working together that those union wages could come down because people are going to want to match that lower rate?
You know, the unions already make adjustments on their rates. The Carpenters Union paid $22 million in rebates to contractors over the last 4 years to basically subsidize the fact that they have high rates. Mm. $22 million is not a small change to get those projects going. That was the price they figured I had to do business with. The unions can make the unions make private deals all the time with people on rates. They just make sure they're quiet about it. But I think we need a more diverse provider system. How about that for a catchy phrase?
I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds, Pat Gillespie. Go ahead.
We are a proud organization that protects the wages and standards of our members. Our members do a wonderful job for their employers, and we have interlopers like this. We've always had these kinds of challenges. I don't see anything new. And as people want to cheer the crack in the system, they better be careful, because we're one of the last bastions of where we still have pensions that are 100% paid for. You know, you want to. People who work for wages should be cheering for us and should be helping us.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. We've been wanting to do this program for some time now and appreciate the fact...
Let's do another hour.
The truth is we could do another hour, but...
Thank you, Marty.
The music is certainly telling me that we have to end this hour. And again, Pat Gillespie, the business manager of Philadelphia's Building and Trades Council, and Tom Farrick is a contributor to Access Philly, writes the Publius column. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. We turned off your microphone, Pat Gillespie. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us. Stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.